Where should we go?
Retreat.
Huh?
Retreat.
Okay. All those who would like to go to Vrindavan. Yes. Let's go to Vrindavan. Now, where would you like to go in Vrindavan? Okay. Where would you like to go?
Governor.
You'd like to go to... Sir, where would you like to go?
To Krishna.
To Krishna Balaram Mandir. Yeah. Okay. Take a minute and think where you would like to go in Vrindavan. Wait, you have to think first. And no one should say Loy Bazaar. Sounds like opposite Krishna Balaram Mandir also. Everyone's playing. Well, where would you like to go?
Yamuna Safari.
Yamuna Safari. Okay. There are so many pastimes of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yes, where would you like to go?
Radha Kund Shyamakund.
Radha Kund Shyamakund Giri Govardhan. Does anyone know a pastime of Krishna's that took place on the Yamuna?
Chastising
Kaliya. Yes, what happened in that pastime? Raise your hands up. What happened in that pastime where Krishna chastised Kaliya? Yes, see ya.
They were playing hockey
something.
They were playing hockey?
Yeah, is that true? This is modern, modern interpretation of what happened.
This was the play that they did at Janmashtami.
The Aussie version, they were playing Aussie rules football by the Yamuna, and one of the players got hurt. No, we have to go to Vrindavan. That means to go to Vrindavan. Why is going to Vrindavan very difficult? Or one of the main reasons why it's difficult is we have to leave this place behind, and we end up being so attached to this place. However, why do we become attached in the material world? Why? Yes. Yes. But what is it that the material world gives us that causes us attachment?
And
the senses give us what? Pleasure. Yes, but the pleasure is adyantavanta. It has a beginning and an end. Na teshu ramate buddha. So a wise person should not become attached to the things in this world because they give pleasure, but they end in misery. Oh yes, thank you very much. Everyone should turn off their mobile phones. Yes. Either that or they should have a really good ring on their mobile phones that remind us of Krishna. So the material world, it offers us some pleasure. But that pleasure in and of itself causes us frustration because it is temporary. But the result of that pleasure is attachment. Rajagun. Rajaguno. So mudbhava. And when rajagun, or the mode of passion, is there, then the next thing that happens is ignorance. It has to happen. But yet we become attached to the things in the material world because they do give us so much happiness, or some happiness. And the result is attachment. And then we are caught so tightly in this web of the material world due to attachment. And therefore, part of the reason why it's so difficult to actually go to Goloka Vrindavan, to actually go to the spiritual world, is because we don't want to go. Or rather, we'd like to take everything from this world with us because we're so attached to it. Especially the body. But we can't take anything from this world, from the material world to the spiritual world. Not one thing. Not one thing. That's very, very heavy, actually, that we can't take the things from the material world to the spiritual world. And that's the main thing, practically speaking, that keeps us in the material world and stops us from spiritually advancing. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that if one actually realizes that the material world, that you cannot be happy in the material world, a person who has realized that has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. That no matter how we manipulate the material world, nevertheless we cannot be happy here. No matter, even if, because we all have these a list in our mind of all the things we would like. And you can call it the only if list. Only if I had this, or only if I didn't have that, then I would be happy. But actually, even if, we should change it to the even if list, from the only if to the even if, and from only if blank I would be happy, we should have even if blank I won't be happy. Because it just can't happen here, because this is not our natural place. It is not our home. And it is a place where there is repeated birth and death. So therefore, it is a frustrating place, because we become attached to things. But the nature of the material world is that it is always shifting due to the element of time. Kalosvin lokachaya krit. And it forces an ending of every favorable and unfavorable material situation. So it's so frustrating. So Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that we're not our body, okay? That we don't die when the body dies, but we become so attached to the body. But despite our attachment to the body, we can't even stay in it. Even if we decide, okay, I'll settle for living in a material body in the material world, I can't even stay in that body. And even if I have the perfect house that I always wanted, I can't stay in it, because we will become evicted. Evicted. Do you know that word? Evicted? What is it? Forcefully, exactly. Forcefully removed, whether we like it or not. We'll be forcefully removed. And it's such a terrible feeling to be evicted. Has anyone read the story of King Puranjana? Raise your hand if you've read the story of King Puranjana in the fourth canto. Seal, have you read it? It is so heavy, actually. But if you want some detachment and renunciation to awaken in your heart, what was that? Oh, everyone turn off their mobile cameras also. I didn't, they even make noise when they don't know how to stop it. We'll look at the menu later. But one way to stop it is don't turn it on. It's the best way. The story of King Paranjana is so difficult to read. It's not a true story in the sense of a pastime that happened, but it's a story, an allegory that Narada Muni told a king who was engaged in fruitive activities continuously. Continuously engaged in performing Vedic rituals. Now why did he perform Vedic ritualistic activities, karmakandic activities? Why? Huh? Yeah, he wanted to be happy in the material world. And this is the Kama Mamangsa philosophy, basically. Of who is the Rishi who propounded Kama Mamangsa philosophy? Jaimini Rishi. And the basic concept is that if I follow the Vedas, very strict followers of the Vedas, and for this reason, the followers of Jaimini Rishi were very much against the Buddhists and they in India, and they strove to drive them out of India. And practically they succeeded, they and Shankaracharya both. But the concept is you very, very strictly, your whole life, your whole existence becomes regulated by the Vedic injunctions. And if you follow them, your piety increases. Notice also, raise your hand if you've read the story of Bali Maharaj. What happened to Bali Maharaj? What is the first thing? He conquered by the blessings and the instructions of Sukracharya. And then what was the first thing he did when he had a position? What was the first thing he began to do? Huh? Not charity, but huh? Excuse me? Yes, he began to perform sacrifices that would increase his piety, because to enjoy in this material world you have to have a specific type of piety, not bhakti piety, but karma, good karma, punya. Piety, that kind of piety. And that's why some people really enjoy in this world. Very, very beautiful, very, very automatically very famous, automatically very wealthy, very talented. It's due to material piety. And other people, they, no matter what they do, they cannot gain anything material. Huh? Yes? Yes? Who, do you know who says that? One wonderful Mataji named Kunti. Yes. So one cannot enjoy beyond one's karma. In fact, it's not that our hard work that makes us enjoy. And you see people in the United States, you often see, maybe Australia too, you see people who leave India and they go to the United States to really try to enjoy and increase their standard of living. But even when they have better jobs, have more money, they're miserable. And their standard of happiness hasn't actually increased at all. Always an anxiety about this and that and this and that and this and that. So Bali Maharaj immediately started performing sacrifices because he didn't have the piety to actually occupy the post of being the king of heaven like Indra had the piety. So he began to perform sacrifices to enable him to occupy that post and rule despite his not having the piety. This would increase his piety. So Krishna ultimately performed, due to the desires of Aditi, performed. He tricked Bali Maharaj so that he would lose his position. But this is one of the main difference in consciousnesses between what happens in the West and what happens in a more philosophically pious place, such as India, is that people actually understand it's my piety that's going to increase my happiness. So that means if you accept that it's your piety that's going to increase your happiness, that means you're inherently accepting that there is a power superior to you, something that no Westerner will, not no Westerner, but Westerners tend not to accept, that there's anyone superior to me. No one can bestow anything on me by my hard work, by my power. I will enjoy, I will increase this by my determination, by my positive thinking, by my this, by my that. I. As if I am the supreme, and as if my desires will move the material energy so that it satisfies me. But of course this is actually a foolish philosophy, because I am ultimately very insignificant in face of the universe, certainly, obviously, insignificant. So karma, actually, in fact, good karma, it greatly entangles us in the material world, in the sense that we become attached to it. Even if we tend to the mode of goodness, we become attached to anything that gives us enjoyment. Anything that gives us enjoyment, we become attached to it. It's just natural. And so something gives us enjoyment, even if it's in the mode of goodness, and we become attached to it. And which mode is attachment born out of? Mode of passion, yes. And then, because of the mode of passion, what comes? Then, rajagano samud bhava, what? Kama isha krodha isha. Because when you become attached to something in the material world, it still doesn't satisfy you. And when you have something and it doesn't satisfy you, that causes, you either want more of it, and that's called greed, or you become angry when it doesn't satisfy you, and that's anger, of course, krodha. So kama isha, krodha isha, rajagano samud bhava. And these, so even goodness turns to passion and then turns to ignorance. And this is the very nature of the material world. It is shifting in this way by the force of time. And as long as we have the desires to enjoy in this material world, if we're not fully actually convinced that it is not possible to enjoy in the material world, we always keep within our hearts some little hope that maybe I'll be the first one or something like that. We keep some hope and some little secret plan that I will gain something in the material world. And therefore, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, for one who actually has assimilated, who understands this, he has made the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Because the material world is like a prison whose bars are so attractive and alluring that you don't want to leave the prison. That's the attachment, especially to members of the opposite sex. These are the bars of the material world. But as soon as we desire something on a different level, that door will start to open. And when we are completely purified and don't want anything in the material world, then we actually have the freedom to develop the actual qualification or get the visa to allow us to go into the spiritual world, the Loka Vrindavan. to be with Krishna in Vrindavan. And that is that deep desire. Tatra loyam api mulam vikalam janmakoti shruti sukritara nalabhyate. It takes many, many, many births in one sense of trying to develop this desire to leave this world and to go to Krishna Loka to actually attain that. But yet, as the Bhagavatam explains in the second canto, that Kadvanga Maharaj, he surrendered to Krishna in half a moment. In just a moment, he gave himself to Krishna. So in one sense, it takes time, but in another sense, it only takes a half a moment. Or another way to look at it, if we can do it, if we can give ourselves to Krishna, we've already taken our time. Or we've gotten some very exceptional mercy that has cut our time. Just like when the king goes to the prison, he may ask, what prisoners are really, really trying to be very, very good? And they're trying to, actually, sincerely trying to get out. And then the warden of the prison may say, well, these over here, they have some bad habits, but they're really, really trying to minimize them, and they're sincerely trying their best. And then the king said, well, let them free. That's mercy. So on one hand, we want to get free, we have to do our work, and so much of that comes from hearing Bhagavad Gita and listening to Prabhupada. If you want to become discouraged about the material world, you should listen to Prabhupada's lectures, because he's uncompromising on this. Uncompromising. I recently was looking at a book of a Christian preacher who was written in the very, very pious in the early 1900s, so about 100 years ago, and he was just saying again and again and again how God wants you to be wealthy. That was God's desire for you, to be wealthy in this world. There was a bit of a spiritual point to it, that if you're wealthy, you can do more service. But that isn't what God wants. He says, Patram pushpam palam toyam yomam bhakti prayatsati. That just give me, what I want is your devotion, your giving of the heart to me, instead of now, you're giving your heart to the material energy with you as the center. So there are so many preachers of every denomination that have really missed the point about the material world. It is just a place of misery. In fact, it is not our home. And Prabhupada is unrelenting on this point. So much so, sometimes you say, oh, I don't want to hear this point anymore. How terrible the material world is, how much suffering is here, that we're all going to die, we're all going to die, we're all going to die. Enough, 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 enough. But yet, it's necessary that we hear this again and again, so that we, at least through our intelligence, we may have our bad habits and our tendencies, but at least through our intelligence, we should understand that there is nothing in this material world that in and of itself has any value whatsoever. This is not what people want to hear. But Prabhupada really didn't care what people wanted to hear. He said that when he came to the United States, he thought that as soon as he would say, because he came on the boat, on the Jaladutta, as soon as he would say, there are four rules you must follow. No intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no meat eating. He thought that the people in the United States would say, now go back. Go back to India. Because people don't want to hear it. But yet, we can't advance, mean move forward. Advancing means moving forward, yes? Advancing, even if you're advancing up the corporate ladder, you are moving forward or up. But we can't advance in spiritual life until we are ready to hear and digest this part of reality, that this is not our home. And therefore, Prabhupada would say we should go back home, back to Godhead, back to our actual home. And then we can go to Vrindavan. If we develop a deep, deep desire, a pure, unmotivated desire to serve Krishna, that means we have to fall in love with Krishna. So a question comes. Well, if I'm not qualified, how can I, if I have so many material desires, and the way I have to really get out, do I have to first get rid of all my material desires, and then I'll be able to hear about Krishna? And the answer is no, because bhavo shada shrotava mana brahmat, that hearing about Krishna is so powerful, it is oshud. What does oshud mean?
Medicine.
It is the medicine. And usually, especially if you take Ayurvedic medicine, what is the taste? Sweet. I don't know what doctors you go to. They're not the ones that I go to. You choose your doctors very carefully. Who only give me sweet medicine. But usually they're very bitter. Why is bitter very healthy?
Purifies the blood.
Yeah, purifies the blood. And what else? The liver, especially. It gets the liver moving. Increases digestion in that way. And digestion is where we get our energy from. So it's bitter. But this medicine, this oshud, bhava oshud, shota mana brahmat, by hearing it, it gives great pleasure to the mind and to the heart. Because Krishna is so powerful in the past, and Krishna's come to this world. In fact, to give us something to hear and talk about. Because if we don't hear and talk about Krishna, we'll hear and talk about so many other things that will further entangle us in the material world. So really what we want to do, what we strive to do, is to hear and talk about Krishna and make Krishna the actual center of our life. Is this easy? If you have love for Krishna, it's easy. Is it easy for me, who doesn't have love for Krishna, and who has so many attachments in the material world? No, it's not easy. But yet, by this process of taking the medicine about hearing about Krishna, and cheto darpana marjanam, by chanting Krishna's name, the heart becomes cleansed. And when the heart becomes cleansed, that which wasn't pleasant, that medicine that wasn't pleasant, becomes very, very, very tasty and relishable, like the Krishna Katha. But the process in the medicine is hearing. So let us hear. So in the Paranjana story, so the king is looking for a, because everyone in the material world is lonely, so the king was also lonely, so he was looking for a wife, and he was wandering looking for a wife, and everything is in an allegory in this story. It has a has a deep meaning. And then finally found one, they had their wife, and then they set up their kingdom, their family. And then eventually he was dying, and he was being protected by the serpent of his life force. But as he got older, his life force became weaker and weaker, less energy. Does anyone experience that? Yes. Even you. How old are you? You're not allowed to experience it. Oh, yes. And then you just don't... How old are you, though?
I'm 28.
Huh?
28.
Yes. So sickness is very bad, yes? Everyone knows that, but actually... And misery is very bad, right? And but actually, the sickness and the difficulties of life and the misfortunes of life, in some senses, they are much better than the successes and the happinesses of life. Why? Why?
Because we can remember Krishna.
But why are they better? We can remember Krishna and the happinesses too. But why are they better? No, 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 no.
No, you become detached.
Yeah.
You become detached.
Yes. But yeah, okay. But what else?
We forget Krishna.
Yeah, we forget Krishna and we forget and we tend to go about our day. Day after day after day after day, thinking that it's always going to be like this. Yes? Do you notice that tendency? We just think, yes? Until when you're about... At some age, you happen to look in the mirror, and then you say, oh no, who is that? The wrong someone else is staring back at me. It's not the person that who I am. Who is this person? So Krishna comes so kindly in the form of disease to remind us it's not automatic that it goes on like this. It comes in the form of misfortune. He comes in the form of misfortune and difficulties. Because otherwise we live in this dream world that it's gonna that we oh everything's so nice and la 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 di la 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 and everything's gonna go on day after day and how nice it is here in this wonderful, miserable material world. And then suddenly something happens that's terrible. And rather than becoming happy, we become miserable. But it's Krishna saying, be intelligent. Intelligent means being able to see the future. If a person can see the future in the stock market, he's very intelligent and he makes so much money. Intelligent is wonderful, but let's see what the future is of this world, of myself. It's like, my favorite example is one that I heard from His Holiness Ridayananda Maharaj, is that our la-di-da, thinking everything is wonderful, is like the person jumping up from the top of a very tall building. He jumps up as far as he can. He's on the 57th floor and he's just jumped up. And for about how many seconds will he go up? 2, 3. And he's thinking, boy, I'm really going up so nicely. But if there is any intelligence involved, you will understand that up means down, and then khatam ho gaya. But rather, if we hear about Krishna, and we have to also hear about the real, actual nature of the material world. Otherwise, we want to hold on and go forward, and then we can't understand why it's not working properly because we're holding on and going forward. So we have to hear about the nature of the material world, and we have to relax our grip on the material world. And the material energy undoubtedly will help us. This is one thing we can count on, that the material energy of this world will help us. It will force us, either today or tomorrow or the next day, it will force us to understand that this place is not a suitable place. In what way? Give me an example of one way it will force us. It can force us. No one has to tell their personal life stories at this time. But what's one way that the material world will show us, it will loosen our grip, if we hear properly? You know, if we don't hear the Shastra and don't understand why the world acts the way it does, the nature of the material world that crushes us will give birth to just more desires. But if we hear properly from Shastra, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the other books our acharyas have given us, if we hear properly, the very thing that causes us misery will also help us give birth to bhakti. Because we'll see how, amazingly enough, that Krishna is actually sending me a message here. He's telling me something. He's telling me something that I don't want to hear, but it is for my own good. So Paranjana, ultimately, he got thrown out, dragged out of his material, of the body. And then, which in the analogy is a city, and that city became pulverized and turned into dust by the attacking, marauding warriors. It was demolished. Sometimes when there's an invader comes, and when they really have an enmity with that city, this happened in many, many times, but there's one famous one in Western history, I can't remember who, in Carthage, yes? Anyone remember that? They were fighting some people and defending some other Greeks. And then they, maybe it was Sparta, a city, they came and destroyed that city. They wrecked and broke down every single building, every single wall. And then, as if that wasn't enough, they took salt and put it in all the fields so that nothing would ever grow there again. So that is what happens. If you read Paranjana, you see that's what, practically speaking, happens to the material body. It's turned into dust. Nothing of it remains. It's turned into dust. It's demolished by the invading forces of time, consisting of
days and
nights passing so quickly, days and nights, and one after the next, robbing away the duration of our life. This is a very happy class, isn't it? but we'll get to Vrindavan. No, I hope. It's just after today. It's Anzac Day, a Memorial Day. So, and then Paranjana had to take another birth. He died thinking about what he was most attached to. Because the consciousness, it grasps onto something. It has to hold something. This is the nature of consciousness. You can't You can't hold nothing. It holds on to something. So we hold the consciousness of a dying person, holds that which he is most attached to. So therefore, just by knowing that, Saratat Bhava Bharata, we should know what our mission of life is. Just by knowing this one thing, we should be able to clearly understand what our actual mission in this life is. Because we're going to go where we're attached to, the consciousness is going to hold on to that. So therefore, what is the mission in our life? It's to somehow or another to become attached to Krishna. If we're just simply attached to this, oh, how disappointed we're going to be. So our mission in life is to become attached to Krishna. So now let us go to Vrindavan. Take a holiday. But sometimes, you know, you take a holiday and it's so nice there, you decide you want to move there. So I know where I want to go, but I'm not, I want to go to the Yamuna. What happened at the Yamuna? Kaliya, the pastimes of Kaliya, where the boys were playing hockey and Aussie rules football at the same time. What happened at the Yamuna? Anything else happened at the Yamuna? Yes. Yes, Krishna. So naughty. He stole all the clothes of the gopis, of the different younger gopis, and he hid them up in a tree. How naughty this Krishna is. But he is completely transcendental. What else happened at the Yamuna? Yes?
We had a picnic with the boys on the bank.
Where was that?
The Yamuna.
Where?
Keshigad.
Keshigad. Okay. Why not? Yes. I'm sure he did. Just imagine sitting with someone who is all beautiful. Just imagine how beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful is. We can't conceive it. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadamani, he says previously, he's describing what the consciousness of prema is like, what love for Krishna is like. And he says that previously I have compared your complexion. He's actually had Shakshad Darshan. What does Shakshad Darshan mean? The Vajrahu. There is Shakshad Darshan. He directly sees Krishna. His love for Krishna is so great that it has attracted Krishna. His desire is so intense that it has attracted Krishna to show himself. And he begins to pray. He's describing this. He said, previously, I've compared the color of your complexion to a rain cloud, but now actually seeing you, I see that the rain clouds of this world have nothing to do with your actual complexion. And that comparison is, it means nothing. Now that I've seen you, your complexion is completely different. It's of spiritual sense. It is completely spiritual. Just imagine what it is like to be sitting for a picnic with a person who is unlimitedly beautiful and unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly knowing. He knows everything. And unlimitedly, what else?
Rich.
Wealthy. Unlimitedly famous. And you're sitting with him, unlimitedly strong. And he's unlimited in his love for his devotees. and his devotees are unlimited in their love for him, and he's sitting with there, and he's unlimitedly powerful. And the boys, there's a problem, of course, because Krishna has unlimited lovers, devotees. So if he, one Krishna, is sitting surrounded by his unlimited devotees, what's the problem?
No problem.
Huh?
No problem.
Unless you have, Krishna has his back to you. You can't see him. Because that, just imagine what these devotees, what it really means to the devotee. When the gopis, when they would blink their eyes, they would criticize Brahma, the creator, for giving them eyes that blink and therefore stop their seeing of Krishna for a split moment. It was torture. The coward boys, when Krishna would, when they were herding the cows, when he would walk beyond, behind a tree for a moment, they would become in complete anxiety for that moment. They couldn't see Krishna. So a problem is, the problem for the boys is, there's Krishna sitting and there's unlimited devotees surrounding him, and some are sitting behind him. But in fact there is no problem, because each boy, because Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, each boy would see Krishna facing him. And when the cowherd boys were playing, they would all, when they would become tired. Of course, not tired like we become tired, but this is Naralila. These are the pastimes that imitate those of us people of this world, and they're especially attractive. And then each one of the boys would want to make a bed for Krishna to rest on out of very soft flowers and leaves. And our acharyas have explained that either they all combined together somehow to make one bed, or Krishna expanded himself to allow each of them to make a different bed for Krishna so that Krishna could lie down. Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. That means he has unlimited power to satisfy his unlimited devotees, and he's all beautiful. All beautiful. And whatever beauty is in this world that's attractive, it's just a drop of Krishna's, a Krishna-given drop from the ocean of Krishna's beauty. And the boys would play everything on the bank of the Yamuna, and they would be exchanging food and joking and playing like boys do. And all this would be done to increase their ecstasies. And Krishna knew exactly how to act to increase their ecstasies. Tell me something else about the Yamuna. Huh?
Krishna went into the Yamuna and he didn't come out.
How is that possible?
He got taken away.
By whom?
Servants of Varuna.
Oh. And what were the coward boys thinking?
They weren't very happy.
They weren't happy. And then Krishna came back. Where did that happen? Do you know?
Nandagarh.
Where? In near Nandagarh?
Near
and near Ramagat.
Yeah.
These places are there. Tell me something else. That, raise your hand if you've been to Vrindavan. Now you can raise your hand. And now you can raise your hand. Have you been to Vrindavan?
No, I can't raise it.
Now you can raise it. But you have to raise your hand higher. Yes. You're so fortunate. You have been to Vrindavan. When did you go?
Just now.
Just now? Oh. That's what we were talking about. Oh. Did you like your visit? Well, then you should go to that Vrindavan sometime too. And then go to that Vrindavan. Did you think, even your first time you were there, did you think it was just an ordinary place like Albert Park? Excuse me, not the temple, but the park. Albert Park is an actual park, right? Yeah. Was it what? There's something, yes? There's something in the atmosphere that is not of this world. There is a sweetness there. It's a sweetness that nourishes the soul. Have you taken seal yet?
Sorry?
Have you taken your boy to Vrindavan?
Yes.
Yes. Where is he? Did you go to the Yamuna when you were there?
Yes.
Did you bathe in the Yamuna? You have to take him back. But you should also hear from, because the Bhagavatam says if you go to a holy place just to bathe, take bath, then you are like cows and donkeys. So go and hear about these holy places. Sir, have you been to Vrindavan?
Yes.
Have you been to Krishna Balaram Mandir?
Yes, I have.
Yes. How many times have you been?
Only once.
How long did you spend there?
I think 2 hours.
Yes, 2 hours. That's all, but that's wonderful. Raise your hand if you've been to Vrindavan again. Physically. Okay. Raise your hand if you haven't been to Vrindavan but want to go to Vrindavan. Yes. Young lady, how many times have you been to Vrindavan?
Five.
Five times. What's your favorite place?
Govardhan.
Yes. Now, everyone who's been to Vrindavan, right now they should close their eyes and think of their favorite place in Vrindavan. And quickly take some flowers and some incense and offer it there. And all those who haven't been to Vrindavan should go to Vrindavan in the form of Radha Balava's lotus feet. And go before Radha Balava. Close your eyes. You have to go before Radha Balava. And take some incense and flowers and string the most wonderful garland. So wonderful a garland. And you can present it. Don't give it to Balava, but put it in the hand of Srimati Radharani and say, please, you give this to Balava. And you can give some tulsi leaves too, if you're in before Radha Balava. Incense, flowers, and then think of a very, very wonderful gift to offer at that place. And if it's a necklace made out of jewels, you can make a wonderful necklace out of rubies and diamonds and gold or whatever. But think of a wonderful gift to offer at that place and make it. And offer it. And then, bow down, full dandavats, either in the dust of Vrindavan or before Radha Balava, and pray for the most wonderful thing. And don't offer a miser's prayer. Think big. Pray for the most wonderful, 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 biggest, beneficial thing for you. And then pray for the most wonderful thing for others too. People that you're closest to, pray for the person you're most angry at too? Then look at the lotus feet of Radha Balava if you're before them, or whatever deities or whatever place. Just look around at that place. And slowly come back here. Lord Brahma, he ended his prayers to Krishna. Little boy, beautiful boy Krishna, and the most powerful person in the universe, Brahma ended his prayers with these words. Please listen, it's one paragraph. And then I'm going to ask you, after I read this, what struck you most deeply about Brahma's final prayer? My dear Lord, I am not interested in either material opulences or liberation. I am most humbly praying at your lotus feet for you to please give me any sort of birth within this Vrindavan forest, so that I may be able to be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan. Even if I am given the chance to grow just as the humble grass in this land, that will be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest of Vrindavan, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of the devotees' feet. Read a little more. The difference between the pure devotees of Vrindavan and other devotees is that the residents of Vrindavan have no other desire but to be associated with Krishna. Krishna, being very kind to his devotees, fulfills their desires because they always want Krishna's association. Now we see why Prabhupada so much stressed, and not only Prabhupada, but that we have to give up our material desires, because if we maintain material desires, then Krishna, out of his kindness, may give them to us. Or he may make a plan to remove those material desires, but he won't give himself to us until we only desire that. The devotees of Vrindavan are also spontaneous lovers. They do not follow the regulative principles. They are not required to strictly follow regulative principles because they are already naturally developed in their transcendental love for Krishna. Regulative principles are required for persons who have not achieved the position of transcendental love. Very important. Brahma is also a devotee of the Lord, but he is subject to follow the regulative principles. He prays to Krishna to give him the chance to take birth in Vrindavan so that he may be elevated to the platform of spontaneous love. All these prayers are so nice. And Prabhupada explains it so nicely in the Krishna book. Raise your hand if you have the Krishna book in your house. Do you have the Krishna book in your house? Do you? Yes? Are you sure?
Okay.
Raise your hand if you've read the Krishna book from beginning to end. Raise your hand if you've read it in the last month. Read something from the Krishna book in the last month. Raise your hand if you read something from the Krishna book in the last week. What did you read, O host, in the last week? Do you remember?
Yeah.
What?
Vishnu was... Vishnu was served by the Brahmana's wife.
Oh. That's such a wonderful pastime. Just by hearing about Krishna, these wives of the Brahmanas became fully absorbed in their love for Krishna. And then when they saw him, oh, you know what happened when they saw him? Vasana, you're raising your hand to say? What happened when, after loving Krishna, they finally saw Krishna? Krishna... He first entered their hearts through his eye, through their eyes, through their looking at him. Actually, he entered their hearts because of their love for him. He was attracted to their love for him. Always they tried to develop love for Krishna. This book is very nice. But I want to hear more about the Yamuna specifically, because later we shall see if Krishna allows a slideshow about the Yamuna. We shall visit the Yamuna. You know something about the Yamuna? Yes?
Rasalila took place in
the... Right by the Yamuna. What's the place? Vamsivat. Very wonderful places. These places are enriched with the sweetness of Krishna's loving dealings with his devotees. Do you have a plan to go back?
Yes.
When will you go?
Next year.
Next year. Why not this year?
Try.
Kal, kal, kal. No. Aj. If not today, then when? Did you like your short stay there?
Yes.
What did you like most?
Actually, I am from Agra itself.
Yes.
I was born and brought up.
Yeah, but
yes, you can say. And I used to go with my parents when I was a child.
Yes.
And I loved the place. But now, after coming here, I have gone only once.
Yes. How long have you been here?
Nearly 15 years.
Long time. Any yes?
Balaram chastised the Jamuna.
Yes.
And she wouldn't cooperate with his.
Yes.
Pastimes.
Yes. How did he chastise the Jamuna?
Threatened to smash her to bits with his plow.
Balaram is very serious when he wants something.
And,
you've
got that picture in the temple room.
Yes. Of Mahaprabhu looking at that pastime.
And it's pretty hard to explain it to people.
Yes.
Lord Krishna and Arjun were there, and then Yamuna came, very attractive lady, and she told Arjun that I want to marry Lord Krishna.
Yes.
And then it happened.
Yes. And what did the Yamuna offer to Krishna? with her waves. Huh? With her waves. Did anyone, when we were thinking, going to Vrindavan in our thoughts, did anyone offer to Krishna any lotus flowers? Yes? A garland of lotus flowers. Around the time of Janmashtami and Radhashtami in Vrindavan, there's always lotus flowers to offer to Krishna. And Krishna will wear garlands of lotus flowers, very, very pink. And what is the shape of a lotus? Lotus, the leaf of a lotus flower. Round? Huh?
Like Krishna's eyes.
Yes, like this.
The petals.
The petals, yes. Not the inside, not the world. But the petals are like this. And that's what Krishna's eyes are like. Very, very long. Coming almost to his ears. And very, very beautiful. And what do Krishna's eyebrows do? Do you know? They dance. Did you know that? And Krishna has a smile. And you know what it is compared to? Madhu Gandhi. Mridu Smritam. Mridu Smritam Madhu Gandhi Aitaraho Vadanam 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 Vadanam. It's compared to what? The fragrance of honey. Krishna's smile is very soft. Not like... It is very subtle. And it's compared to the fragrance of honey. When you think of honey, you think of its sweet taste. But it has a very subtle fragrance too, that's also very sweet. What else about Krishna's form? Tell me something about Krishna's form. Everyone think of... Take a moment and think about something about Krishna's form, because everyone in this room I'm going to ask. Yes, first.
His hair is like the feathers of a raven.
The feathers of a raven? When? At what time?
Remembering a description of it.
Yes, but that's when he's very, very young. When he's very young.
The moor punk.
Yes. Peacock feather in his head. Yes.
You said Vajantimala?
Yes. What is a Vajantimala? A very long garland. Yes.
What is meant to treat?
Yes.
Yellow garment?
Yellow garment, like what? That sparkles like
lightning.
Think of Krishna. Think of what he looks like. What else? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Is
the Kastuba jewel? Yes. And what is the Kastuba jewel called in Vrindavan? But how did he get that? How did he get it? Shankarchuda. But actually, when Krishna took that jewel from Shankarchuda, he gave it to Balaram. Yes? And what did Balaram do with it?
Gave it to
Yes. And what did...
To
Srimati Radharani. Yes. Tell me something else about what Krishna looks like. Anyone? Raise your hand if you want to say something. Yes.
He has very long arms.
He has very long arms. What are they compared to? What else? Something about Krishna, yes.
Yes, shark like earrings.
Yes, makar, actually. Makar shaped earrings that cover his ears. And also they, yes.
Beautiful lotus feet.
Feet. beautiful lotus feet. Tell me about them.
They are fully decorated.
What does it mean to have lotus feet? Very, very soft. And what else? Yes?
He loves his favorite flute.
He loves to play his flute? Yeah. And what happens if one hears the flute of Krishna? Huh? Yeah, stunned. What did you say?
Many things happen.
What happened when the calves heard the sound of Krishna's flute? Yeah, that ear became like cups trying to drink that nectar. And what happened to the calves who were drinking milk from the mother cows? They became stunned because the sound of Krishna's flute entered their ear and they became stunned. They couldn't do anything. And the milk just dribbled down from their mouths. Something. Why Krishna's feet compared to lotuses again? We got some reason, but
they mark the lotus flowers.
Yeah, yes. They have the mark of the lotus on them.
His neck has got grooves like a whirl on a conch shell.
Yes.
And he walks like an elephant.
Have you ever seen an elephant walk? It's very cool. Very stately.
Gunja flowers.
Yes, and gunja necklace. But why was his feet? Why else are they? What is lotus like about his feet?
Soft.
The color. They're very, very soft. Soft lotus feet. And the residents of Vrindavan, when they would think that Krishna is going out to herd the cows, they would be in so much anxiety because there may be some sharp grass or some stones. And Krishna's so lotus feet that are so tender that even if a leaf falls on Krishna's body, it changes its color. So it's like if you press your skin, it changes its color. So Krishna's body is so soft that even if a leaf falls on it, and those same lotus feet are walking throughout the land of Vrindavan herding the cows, and the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna goes out, they're simply in anxiety about Krishna. Oh, what happens if he steps on a stone? What happens if this happens? Mother Yasoda tells the cowherd boys that make sure, you Balaram, you stand on this side, Sridham, you stand on this side. Just protect him. Don't let him go alone. Just all, because Mother Yasoda is only thinking about Krishna's welfare. And everyone in Vrindavan is only thinking about what will please Krishna. If you want to go to Vrindavan, that's all you have to do, is only think of what will please Krishna. Complete selflessness. The self is still there, but this is love. And the opposite is selfishness. Everyone in the material world only thinks about what will please me. And therefore, no one is happy. As our Dadu in Vrindavan says humbly, I am the worst kind of fish, a selfish. And this is what it means to be in the material world, to be a selfish. And in Vrindavan, everyone is a Krishna fish. Everyone is like a fish swimming in the ocean of nectar, serving the lotus feet of Krishna. Tell me something else about the lotus feet of Krishna. Who has it? Yes, okay.
He has got his feet reddish.
Yes.
And it has got marks.
Yes. Pinkish lotus feet.
And he has got this mark of the flag, Ankush. Flag.
What is Ankush?
Ankush is the rod which controls the elephant.
Yes.
The flag, the Ankush, the lotus flower, and the club.
And?
Club.
And? And what else?
Flag.
What else?
Flag.
Barley. Barley. The fish. And when Krishna would walk in Vrindavan, his lotus footprints would be impressed in the soft earth of Vrindavan. And no one, neither human nor animal, would ever smear or walk over or in any way. Everyone would respect those footprints of Krishna. This is the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. It cannot be described in the material world.